Around the year 1600, there is a new spirit in the arts in Italy. A young painter called Caravaggio invents a dramatic, realistic kind of religious imagery. Another artist, Annibale Carracci, creates a lively and robust form of decorative painting. At the same time, the first operas are written. This new art form combines grandiose spectacle and intense expression. This is the beginning of a new era in the arts, the period which we now call the Baroque. It starts in Italy around 1600, spreads to the rest of Europe, and lasts into the middle of the 18th century. Strong gestures, heightened emotions, massiveness, movement, all of these characterize the powerful Baroque style. Michelangelo Merisi di Caravaggio, a rebel and a fighter, who spends the last years of his life as a fugitive from justice, but he leaves behind a series of pictures that change the history of art. This is The Calling of St. Matthew. Caravaggio finishes this picture in the year 1600 for a chapel in the Roman Church of San Luigi de Francesi. A strong shaft of light cuts across the picture. Like a theatrical spotlight, it picks out Matthew and his assistants on the left. For the opposite wall of the chapel, Caravaggio paints the martyrdom of St. Matthew. The harsh lighting and dark shadows create a violent, ominous mood. Caravaggio's gestures are strong and exaggerated, like an actor's. The figures jut out at sharp, dramatic angles. The starkly lit figures against dark backgrounds create a striking effect. The music you're hearing was written at about the same time by Girolamo Frescobaldi, organist at St. Peter's Church in Rome, starting in 1608. Like these paintings, the music has a sharp, expressive quality. The spirit is also felt in secular art. This is a room in the Roman palace of the Farnese family. In 1600, Annibale Carracci completes his fresco decorations of the ceiling, and in a short time, the Farnese Gallery becomes one of the most famous rooms in Europe. The pictures show scenes from Greek and Roman mythology. These stories are familiar to the educated public of the time, and they furnish the subject matter for many works of art. There is a strong sense of movement. Here, Mercury flies down to give the golden apple to Paris. The gestures and expressions are animated and lifelike. The figures have a feeling of weight and solidity. The pictures are surrounded by what look like statues and stucco decorations. But all the statues, medallions, masks, and ornaments are just painted on so skillfully that they fool the eye. The Farnese Gallery, with its visual tricks, is like a great stage set, like the setting for an early Baroque opera. This was the first operatic masterpiece, Orfeo, Fable in Music, by Claudio Monteverdi, presented at Mantua in the year 1607. Monteverdi is director of music at the court of the Gonzagas, rulers of the Italian state of Mantua. He composes Orfeo as part of the annual carnival season entertainment. Opera is made possible by a new musical device called recitative, a sort of sung speech. Monteverdi uses it to create dramatic scenes. Opera is a great pageant with fantastic sets, costumes, and stage machines. It becomes the most popular form of entertainment in the courts of Italy and throughout Europe. It satisfies the yearning of the age for drama and splendor. Along with Monteverdi, the young painter Peter Paul Rubens is also employed by the Mantuan court. Rubens is from Northern Europe, and like many artists of the time, he considers a few years in Italy a necessary part of his training. In 1608, Rubens returns to his native Antwerp, principal city of the southern Netherlands. This country is part of the Spanish Empire. It is Catholic, with strong cultural ties to Southern Europe. Rubens establishes his reputation with a series of dramatic altarpieces. The movement is agitated and violent. The colors are brilliant and intense. Rubens' secular paintings have the same qualities. This is the Battle of the Amazons. At about the same time, Monteverdi was developing a way of representing battles and other violent scenes in music, and it matches the spirit of these pictures. Rubens loves to paint nudes. He likes to create the warm flesh tones and to model the solid, rounded forms. Infants and children receive the same sensuous treatment. And Rubens loves the paint itself. We can feel the movement of the brush across the canvas. Rubens' free use of paint like his choice of subjects, is an expression of his hearty, full-blooded attitude toward life. As his country's leading citizen, Rubens becomes involved in international diplomacy. He combines political missions with official portraiture. This is a sketch of King Philip IV of Spain, the Duke of Buckingham, Queen Marie de Medici of France. Marie gives Rubens one of his most important commissions, a large cycle of paintings depicting her life for the Luxembourg Palace in Paris. Rubens creates a glorified biography in pictures for the Queen. Scenes from her life are combined with allegorical figures according to an elaborate program. Here, Marie arrives in Marseille to become the wife of King Henry IV. France bows down to welcome her, and fame flies overhead. Her coronation. Henry IV is assassinated and ascends to the Council of the Gods. Marie takes the reins of government and leads France to victory. Finally, she turns over the rudder of the ship of state to her son, Louis XIII. Rubens is knighted by the kings of England and Spain, and his paintings are known and imitated throughout Europe. With him, the Baroque becomes a triumphant international style. What Rubens did in paint, Giovanni Lorenzo Bernini did in stone. This is his early statue of David. The head radiates tension and energy. Bernini catches the moment just before the action. In typical Baroque fashion, the statue seems to be focused on a point outside itself. David is about to fling the rock right out into the spectator's own space. In 1623, Bernini is 25 years old. In that year, his friend Cardinal Barberini becomes Pope Urban VIII, and he tells the young artist, "It is your good luck, Cavaliere, to see Maffeo Barberini Pope, but we are even luckier that Cavaliere Bernini lives at the time of our pontificate." During the next 50 years, Bernini labors to complete the decorations of the Papal Church of St. Peter's. Directly under the dome and over the tomb of St. Peter, Bernini builds a bronze canopy, or baldacchino, standing 94 feet high. For the apse of the church, he creates the Cathedra Patri, or Throne of St. Peter, a luxurious setting for the wooden chair that is believed to have belonged to Peter himself. Above the throne is a mass of angels and cherubs, and in their midst a round window which lets in a golden light. Here, sculpture, architecture, and lighting are combined to produce a single coordinated effect. Throughout the church, Bernini builds statues and monuments for the tombs of the popes. In front of the building, Bernini adds two massive colonnades, which open out to form a huge piazza. This provides a dramatic, awe-inspiring approach to the most important church of the Catholic world. By the late 1670s, Bernini is a venerated man in Rome, the intimate of popes and cardinals, and the most respected architect and sculptor in Europe. In these same years, in the palaces and churches of Rome, the young Arcangelo Corelli is becoming known as a violinist, conductor, and composer. This is the great age of the violin, the era of the master instrument makers like Amati and Stradivari. The Baroque violinist often launched into elaborate improvisations, especially in the slow movements. We know how Corelli's improvisations sounded, because he wrote some of them down for one edition of his popular violin sonatas. The flowery, ornamented melodies are almost painfully sweet, like the Smiling Angels by Bernini and his contemporaries, which fill the churches of Rome. This is the Scala Regia, the great stairway which Bernini built for the Vatican Palace. The grandeur and nobility of this stairway are echoed in the orchestral music of Corelli. Corelli developed the form known as Concerto Grosso, in which a small group of solo instruments is set against the sound of the whole orchestra. The balancing of opposing forces, the interplay of light and shadow, give the music an architectural quality. Motives are repeated over and over until they build to a climax. Or the mood can be stately, monumental. Underneath it all is a feeling of movement. The music of Corelli and the architecture and sculpture of Bernini's Rome, this is the Baroque at the height of its power and influence.